Right? The Torah, there are many stories that happen to our avos, to our ancestors, and the Torah doesn't include everything. The Torah includes, you know, some stuff that's relevant for us. Certainly, information that is relevant to carry on the story. What's our story? How our founding fathers were chosen, and they began, the broad history we need to include. The truth is, if you wouldn't have included chapter 14, Perek Yud Dalet, the story of the four kings and the five kings, it's true, Avram rescued Lot, it's true, that happened. But if you hadn't had that Perek, you could theoretically still have the whole story. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't have the first chapter, where Hashem tells Avram, I want you to go to Eretz Canaan, okay, you miss a key point here. But if you don't have the 14th chapter, which is the four kings fought the five kings, and then the four kings defeated the five kings, they took Lot, and Avram freed Lot, okay, you could still have the whole story. So the question I'd like to ask, and get your take on, like, what do we learn from this story? Like, why is the story so necessary to include in the Torah?
Well, this is an old philosophical debate. This is just my opinion.
Yes, sure. I have about five approaches, so maybe I'll have another one also.
Did God create the world and then continue to manage it, or
right.
did he leave it to its own devices
okay.
after he left it?
Right.
By putting the story in, it has a purpose of saying that God's hand is still in the story.
In what way?
The fact that it's mentioned at all.
Meaning what? I understand.
The fact that that's four kings, the four kings, one versus the five.
You say this is God's hand?
It's all God's, this is all planned through
You're saying whatever's in the Torah. Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's an approach. If it's there,
so obviously God somehow. In other words, things that we do maybe is based on our own free will, but the fact that the Torah tells us these four kings, but the five kings, it's obviously God had a hand in it. So God has a hand in what's going on in the world. That's
yes,
what you're saying. Interesting.
It's an approach.
I like that. Interesting. Huh? Yeah.
I think the Torah wants to let you know. Because otherwise you wouldn't know. You will know that Abraham was a rich man.
Right.
But you really didn't know the level of his influence in the area, in the surroundings.
So, when you say influence, what is the story talk about Abraham? What is his influence?
That he was a very powerful man.
Okay, so now you're saying the purpose of the story is to start to paint Abraham his qualities as being a military man. This is the raya, right? This is for the in the whole debate about should you fight and yeshiva students, right? Avram Avinu, people use that.
Avram Avinu, you think of chesed. You don't think of someone taking up arms, but at some point you got to.
Right. So people use, yes. So people definitely use that. Right. That's the whole machlokes. But the whole machlokes between serving the army or not is based on whether you believe in the Midrash, which is Avram and Eliezer, and he threw sand and miraculously defeated them, or when he actually took, that's what it's all boils down, 318 men, and he actually waged war. But okay, so in other words, it clearly tells the story about Avram being a military man, okay? Any other thoughts? Like, why we need this story? Why we need this story? Right. What is an interesting detail, like, by the way, even if you have this story, there's like an interesting detail in the story which seems totally unnecessary on the surface. I wrote three psukim here. Perek Yud Dalet, Ubarba Esrei Shana, on the 14th year. It says like they served them for like a bunch of years and they rebelled against them for a bunch of years. And then the 14th year, Bakhtel Omer Blachim Sherito, the Kedol Omer and the kings who were with them came. Vayatlus Rifaim Bashos Karnai Vesazuz Baham Vesaim Beshavi Kir Yosayim. And they defeated the Rephaim in Asher Karaim, the Zuzim in Ham, and the Emim in Shavei Kiryatayim, and the Chorin Haram Seir, until El Parad. And then they went to Ein Mishpat, and they defeated the Amaleki, and then Marida, they're living in Chatzon Tamar. Like that, like who cares? And not in a bad way, but like, what's the relevance of that? Of the details of the places? You know, you went to Avram's military man, that's fine. God has it handed there, that's fine. These details seem very mundane until you get to Parshas Devarim, where you find some of these names also. We're going to get back to this. Look at Devarim, Perek Beis, right? He has some of these names here. He's got the Emim and Pasuk Yud, the Rephaim, the Chorim. So I'm curious about that. These details, which don't take up any space until Devarim Perek Beis. I just find that interesting. So what I'm going to share with you is I didn't think of Aaron's idea, which is interesting. Maybe next time I give the share, I'll add a sixth. But I the Mefarshim point out the five broad reasons for the significance of this story. And the reason I'm telling you five is because it's possible you're not going to like most of these answers. Usually I give you five, you'll like at least one of them. That's what I'm hoping. Give you five, maybe one will be good. So one is broadly the qualities of Avraham Avinu. So Rabbeinu Bachaya actually points out, as you mentioned, that he was a military man. He says this explicitly, Rabbeinu Bachaya. He says in the second line, he says, V'tagid lecha parasha shei Avraham Avinu gibor v'shmilchama. The parasha tells you that Avraham was a strong man. He was a man of war. The four kings defeated the five kings. Okay, he was a military man. I want to tell you that about him. Okay. The Radak says, talks about Avram's qualities, but not necessarily that he's a military man. He writes in the second line. And the story is written in the Torah, Lodia, to inform us, Yosher Lev of Avram Im Hakel, Botech Bavacholev. What does Avram have? What does he have? He's bitachon. Kibimad anashim rodav achrei Avram lachim. There were a few people he chased after the four kings. Lodia ki roi ladim limsor atzmo lemakom sakaralatzi krovo. So he showed loyalty to put himself in danger to rescue his relative, like what Avram Avinu did. So the story still shows loyalty. The Rabag says, he says the following: Tuvas Shvi hu b'midos. One of the seventh goy has a whole list of midos. And what is Roy Laudam She Yani Atzmo Bamidas Haistapkus? You know what the Midas Haistapkus is? To be Mistapek? You know what Mistapek is? To be sufficient. Mistapek Bamua, to be happy with a little. So you have to the Midas Haistapkus. Below you, Vakish Logadol, you shouldn't seek such grander things. Hello, Tira, don't you see? She Avram Lo Ratza Lo Kachas Dava Miashala. Avram didn't want to take anything from the spoils. Right, listapek, but ma'ashechano Hashem yisal me'akinyanim. Hashem will give what he needs. So he doesn't want. So you can look at this story. You can think of other examples that shows Avram's qualities. This is another story that highlights some of Avram's character. You know, I think about the, you know, the first story in Parshas Vayera. We talk about Avram with the angels, and okay, so the one that it furthers the plot because he says you're going to have a kid, but like it also tells you the quality of Avram. He was it's one story of him being a balchas. You know. Avram was known for Achnas Sarchi. We're not going to tell every single story of his Achnas Sarchi. We tell one story. So here we have this story tells you Avram's military mind. It tells you his loyalty. It tells you his selflessness. It tells you a whole bunch of things. There are other things as well we can talk about Avram's quality. Like he did force his religion on the other people. There are a lot of things we could talk about Avram's quality. Okay. Now, Rav Hirsch says something different. He says the following. He says, Hayishtatfut Avram Beirum Eilo Hayisamasi Lo Pashut Avram. This wasn't so simple, right? So, Chavesh Melachim Dasuk Fufim LeKardal Omer. Five kings are subservient to Kardal Omer. Vasof Hemarun, then they rebel. Vadesh Shalom Otsarav. They're obviously very strong. Shehar Kardal Omer Huchrach Likwa LeMachios Banos Briso Lazot LeLachiotam. They were so strong, the five kings, that Kardal Omer, the mighty king, had to get some of his allies to help him out. Afterwards, they were defeated. The five kings. Vata Bezos Hashem, and now with the help of God, he's Tich Avram. Hu Levado, Beliviat, Adashim, Nevriso, Avram alone with the men in his house. He's able to defeat the mighty king. Avram Kobesh Mechadat Saras, Pshutok Mashmo, he's able to defeat the whole king, he's able to conquer the whole land. Hu Levach Tolover, Kiman Lacholo Recharat, he chased after him the whole land. Mechevron al Damasa, from Chevron till Damascus. Megaresh also Meshachrer Haaretz. He drives about, he feeds the land. Haftachat Kodesh Baruch Hu Lachat Dada Mit Kayemet Kipshutat Legedav. What did God say to Avram? I'm going to give it to you. Now, we understand it means to who is he giving it to? To the children. But this is a fulfillment, a little bit. You get a taste of the promise of God here. Right? Taste of God's going to fulfill his promise that he defeats the other enemies. So again, you can look at the story and we see the hand of God. It's not as extreme as what Aaron said. Hand of God in the whole battle, Hashem's even involved in the nation of the world. But here, Hashem's hand, right, in the promise he made to Avram, Lachot Nana. Okay. The Maaseh Hashem, there's this commentary, Maaseh Hashem, it's Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi. He makes the following comment. He says the following. He says, Sipra B'chava, Right. So he says the also harba blachim b'sachabisha, the four kings of the five. Near ayos p'si barzel fi p'shuta divrei mutar aid by hamtzar. It seems there's no purpose of this. Shemayachar shakavos atzibur kulahu. What's the purpose of the story? Avin wants to lahatzil slot shenitziach blachim harba. What's the purpose of the story? Avin wants to save lot. He wants to defeat the four kings. Fine. And then he says the harba we're going to see soon. It hints the four kingdoms. Fine. We can talk about that in a second. Afil ken yira shemashibi shadam blachim hikus refaim and zuzim and emim and the chori kulam derech mutar. This all seems extra. What's the fact that the kings captured Rephaim, Zuzim, Emim, Chorim? That's all extra. Okay. Turn the page. Look what he writes. It's in the following. Look what he writes. What, who cares about where all these people came from? And now we're going to turn to what we said. Why do we care about the places where the four kings conquered? Rephaim, Zuzim, Emim, Chorim. Because now we can understand in Parshas Devar, what does it say? Shamar Hashem Yisparach LeMoshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Hashem gave their inheritance to Bnei Lot and to Bnei Esav. Shenasinas Eretz Yisrael, Yels Yaus. Okay, who got Eretz Yisrael? Like, what's the greater Israel? You know, we think that what the greater Israel is Yehuda and Shomron. So there's a greater Israel. What's the greater Israel? Greater Israel's Transjordan. And what's south of Beersheba? Maybe part of Israel, whatever. No, Lebanon's north, but what's the southern area of Eretz Yisrael. Maybe some of modern Israel might be some of that. But who got that? Who got that land? Who got the land east? Who got the land east of Eretz Yisrael? Where were the countries, the east of Eretz Yisrael? Bnei Israel, how they travel? They travel from Egypt. They travel through the desert. They go around, and they're coming from the east. So who's on the east? What nations are on the east? They defeat Sichon and Og. They defeat them, and Hashem says, "Don't go into Edom. Don't go into two other nations. Ammon and Moab. Where do Ammon and Moab come from? Lot, right? Abram's descendant, right? So what's his point? And if you look, so what do we see here? Now, Ammon. So the Psukim and Devarim say what? That Ammon and Moab, like he says. Oh, if you go back to Devarim, you just turn the page in a second. He says, oh, don't conquer Moab, right? Because I gave him to Bnei Lot. Well, who is Ammon? Ha'emim lefanim yashuba. Oh, who? The Lot that Moab, the land that Moab was living in, who lived there before Moab? The Emim. And who else? Yudav, the Rephaim. And in the south, there were the Chorim, and Esav took them out. So in other words, the purpose of this, says the Basi Hashem, in the details to tell you, that the fulfillment of Hashem's promise to Avram, I'm going to give your descendants this land, is not only the narrow land of Israel to Yitzchak, but it's the broader Israel, which is who? Lot and Esav. And that's why he says, he lists it here, oh, who's living in these lands, the Emim, the Chori, the Rephaim, and who conquered them? So Devarim tells you, oh, Ammon and Moab conquered them, and you know, we always talk about how we conquered the seven nations of Eretz Yisrael. Well, Ammon and Moab conquered the land we call modern-day Jordan, and Esav, Seir, conquered the Chori. So it wants to tell you that in our parsha, tell you it's all part of God's plan. This is all like all these conquests, part of God's plan, and Ammon and Moab. So it sort of foreshadows that not just when we say that I'm going to give you the land, it's also Avram's broader descendants. You also have that actually, where you have that Avram, you know, at the end of his life, in a few parshios, he sends away Yishmael, Keturah, right? He sends the kids, and he sends them east, so like to settle, like there's the broader, you know, our cousins who we're fighting with. I don't know if they're officially our cousins, but the question of genealogically, are they really descendants, okay? But the broader, the children of Yishmael, the children of Lot, the children of Esav, in the real world, they're supposed to be part of the enlarged. They're not supposed to be attacking us. They're supposed to be protecting us. So that's the purpose of this, of the details of the story. I thought that'd be interesting.
Rabbi, yeah. My memory is failing me a little bit, but if I remember,
yeah,
when Yehoshua came to the land,
right,
and these people came in, and Yehoshua sent messengers and told them
the Givonim.
Was it the Givonim?
Givonim, but they pretended they weren't from the seven nations, and they managed to retrieve them.
There's other people that told him, why this is our land, why are you coming to fight? And Yeshua said, this is not your land. Before you, I think he said, some of these people were there. And Abraham conquered the land way before you came into the picture.
So you're saying that Avram? Yes, I have to look that up. I gotta look that up.
I don't remember quite, but I know that.
Okay, Rabban, two more. Rabban says the four kings are like the four nations. So who's the first king? Rabban says the first king is the king of Babel. So that's the kingdom of Babel. Elasar, right? Ayoch Melch Elasar. That's Madai or Paras. That's Paras or Madai. Elam is Yavan, and the fourth king is Melch Goyim. Bunch of nations, and who was the apparently that's Melch Romi, that he ruled over a city from the many different nations. So basically, this is foreshadowing. Ramban is classic foreshadowing. But you know what that in Hebrew is? You know, foreshadowing? What happens to the parents, happens to the kids? You know, the expression is? Maise Avos, Sivan Labanim. So Ramban loves doing this. When he finds, like, you know, stories here, continue to the subsequent generations. That's Ramban, okay? So you have so far, besides Aaron's beautiful pshat about Hashem is involved in the world, so you have the pshat of the story tells Avram's character, military man, again, which may tell you values of in our debate, you know, should he serve in the army or not? So it could be military man, selflessness, loyalty, right? It could tell you about the fulfillment of Hashem's promise. It could tell you about the basis for how Avram's children conquered the land, some of the details. It could also be talking about forecasting future history by some civil body. The most fascinating pshat I like, at least I like it, is Rav Hirsch's own explanation. Look what he writes. He says, why is he telling you? You know where they're fighting. They're fighting, right? The four kings are fighting the five kings. Where is the world war taking place here? In Eretz Yisrael. He says, Emes nosefes hitgalta kan Avram. There's another truth that Hashem's telling Avram. The fact that the four kings are fighting the five kings, this world war is taking place where? Fifthly here, in Eretz Yisrael. It's going to tell you something about our nation. They're fighting by us. In the very place, the very land that Hashem promised, this is going to be your land. So the first test, like Hashem said, okay, I'll give you this great land. What happens when he first gets there? Famine. You know, this is the great last giving, famine. Second, Shani, what's the second one?
War.
Like, oh, this is great, right? So, Ha'erez Eina Manika Me'etzim Tiva Lo Hatzacha Chamrib Lo Hatzmaut Medini. He said, the land that Hashem gave Avram, in its essence, cannot survive normally, like, agriculturally, because there's no water source, and also militarily, it's the worst place. It's obviously the worst place, because everyone's going to be fighting over it, right? B'shnei B'chirot Eilu, in these two characteristics, Eretz Yisrael, he had nigud ha-gmor shemitzayim. This is the opposite of Egypt. Poritah shel ha'aretz liyo b'chatzir shemayim. The land's going to grow, it depends on the kindness of shemayim. U'mamadah ha-medini, afu talu b'chem, and also the success nationally depends on others. He enenem musugla latzif hitnagdut mul polush zar. He can't stand against a mighty army. Kishlatzman lo te'eretz yisrael l'rav l'lot medini. It's like it's the worst place. It leads to famine and also to other places conquering it. Mikuma b'tzomah hadrachim bo nifkashot Europa asher Africa. It's like, you know, I think about, you know, like risk, right? Like, you know, there's certain territories of risk that you want to get because you got that. Well, either you be conquered a lot. Like certain territories are like key, like to all the territories. Like Middle East is like, right. You got Europe, you got Africa, you got Asia, and within the Middle East you got Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael is the center. It's like the cross path with Europe, Asia, and Africa. So whenever there are mighty wars, they're always going through Israel. Okay? So God, who has a sense of humor, chooses this land for us. So for us to have a holy life here, if we live up to our values, we're good. Shalosh Pam Bashina how you nezavim devil to arts, right? The famous line of three times a year, what you're supposed to go make Ali al Arego, supposed to leave. Well, you leave your borders, no one's gonna be there. So the answer is we're promised that. But we're promised this is a beautiful land. Like when we think about, you know, I think we think about Eretz Yisrael, it depends on God. we think about the fact that it's, you know, compare, Torah says explicitly, right? It depends on rain versus Egypt where you have a natural water source. So we see that you're looking to God all the time. But this story points out that Israel is not only looking to God from a agricultural standpoint, but it looks to God from a national standpoint. It doesn't make sense that we should survive Israel. It just doesn't make our whole like our people were like the fact, you know, we've come back, we've got like we had this, you know, come back after 2,000 years in exile, our nation's come back, that we defy history. The fact that we should have a land in this place defines history. Everything about Eretz Yisrael defies history, it defies nature, and that's the specific place that God chose for us. So that's the purpose of the story. The first story is to say, all about, this is an insecure place, this wonderful place that God chose for us. Naturally, it's not a wonderful place. That's specifically, that's the sukkah, you know, like all these themes prepare us, not just, you know, once a week, 1 week a year for sukkahs, but like mamish every day, living in Eretz Yisrael, in this place that doesn't, that requires the miracles of God to provide for us, yeah.
I think there's also another, you know, now that you explain it from this point of view, yeah. and what yeah. was said before, I think there's another thing here also. And I think it's one of the first confrontations between the purposes or the principles of the Torah with another political system which wants to subjugate, wants to enslave people.
Right.
And here you have Abraham with his political ideas to treat slaves in a completely different way, to treat yes. people in a completely different way, which really is, it goes against five kings wanted to do.
Yeah, so the truth is, if we could talk more about the qualities of Abraham Avinu, and I have a whole other share about this, yeah. but Abraham Avinu, really, if you think about Abraham Avinu, God promised him a land, and he charges him to believe in ethical monotheism. If you think about it, and on this land, and Avram actually had the ability to, he could have created that. He just, Hashem said, I give this land to you, and I give you a vision, set of values, I give you a mandate, I give you the Senate, the House, I'm giving you a mandate, you just defeated the four kings, beat the five kings, you're in control, you have everything, you have absolute, no checks, no balances, you got everything. And Avraham Avinu, he says, you know what? I'm going to preach ethical monotheism. I'm going to try to convince people through persuasion, not through force. So like, so that's another aspect, perhaps, of the qualities of Avraham Avinu. I think that's correct. So the story has a lot. Even though it's on the surface, you continue to plot without it. But I think the story tells a lot of things about us, about our forefather Avraham, about Eretz Yisrael, about Hashem's promise, about, you know, how God's behind the scenes. And so it's actually a very, very important story when you dig beneath the surface. Okay.